Before we jump in, a warning that we are an explicit book podcast.
Yes, that means swearing, shitty jokes, and a whole lot of dark humour that some may take offence to.
Please check your trigger warnings on all of the books we cover.
You've been warned.
The episode starts in 3, 2, 1.
A book in a bed.
Everyone, and welcome back to another episode of A Book and a Bev. This week, we begin the final leg of our SJM Universe coverage with book one in the Crescent City series, aka House of Earth and Blood by Sarah J. Maas. It's only fitting that we started this entire podcast covering ACOTAR, which again, we don't talk about those episodes because we're better. But we finished last year as well with the Throne of Glass series, and we're going to be wrapping up this year with Crescent City. So it just makes sense.
We're fucking brilliant. It's all in here in our giant brains.
It's almost like a cult or something.
Yes. It is.
You can call me Jesus.
You can call me Jesus. On that charming note, we are joined by two of our amazing special guest co-hosts, but they're joining us together for the first time. We have got Emily and Jess, aka Emily's Booked Up and A Little Bit Booked.
Thanks for having us again, guys.
I'm so happy that we get to have you guys because from what I know of you, this is how you guys became friends, was this series.
Yes.
Sure was.
Hence the matching.
For those that are audio only, they're wearing matching Rune Dannon shirts. So, yes. On that note, what are we all drinking?
This is actually Vanilla Coke Fireball because, you know, I don't know, fire is light.
Lily.
Yes.
You're drinking Lily. Yeah.
I fucking would too.
You made it sexual. No, we were grieving.
I did. Yeah, well, but it's fine.
I'm drinking a Raspberry Cruiser because it says ruby red as Bryce's toenail polish.
Oh, not the toes.
Why was it so prominent?
Hi, Sarah.
I'm sort of on the same, but it's strawberry daiquiri gin. No link whatsoever. It was in my fridge.
Just vibes.
It's just Slay. Vibes.
Just vibes. Yeah, look, I'm drinking a Jack and Coke because it's something easy to drink, unlike the first 5-chapter info dump that this book has.
Ooh, touche.
Yeah, I had to write fucking notes for that. And just so you're all aware, if you're going into this podcast and you haven't read the book, I'm not giving you all the details. There are parts where I've literally gone, this happens, blah, blah, I don't care. Okay. So everyone's aware.
On that charming note, Georgia, did you want to actually kick us off with how you felt about the book?
So funny, because I'm actually looking at my notes in comparison to your guys. I wrote mine at like 11 o'clock at night, and you could tell because I'm literally like, I'm over this. This book was great. The end. But no, this book was brilliant. The info jump obviously hurts me as a romanticy only, really girly, but I could do with 5 pages of questions for the entirety that is this book. It's so good. I loved the banter. I loved Bryce and her queen status that could literally make me weak in the knees, and Hunt's will to live just being tested. I just love that. I love their story, and I just want to be immersed in Sarah J. Maas books for the rest of my life, and I don't understand why that's so much to ask for, you know?
It shouldn't be this hard.
It shouldn't be. Honestly, I deserve better.
So the beautiful thing about this book is SJM gives us so much information that you can completely immerse yourself in the story, visualizing every bloody detail, right down to individual face shapes. Like, she describes everything. I want to live in Lynethian. It's like our world with all the tech and social media we've become accustomed to, mixed with, old folklore fantasy we grew up dreaming about and wanting to escape to. Part one is information overload, and I'm glad that I'm not reading that part. My first read through had me feeling a bit dizzy, I won't lie. I actually remember struggling to push through, and I had to message people to say, hey, is it worth it? But once you finish, you really appreciate it for all it was. I mean, you can't imagine anything being left out. And in my reread, I didn't feel like it was a slog at all. I loved it all the drama, the info. The second time around, I was like, yep, no, it needed to be there. And there was no anxiety of the build up. So yeah, I laughed, I cried, I swooned, I swore. We know that no one is safe when SJM writes, and the tables can turn at any second. Someone could die on any page. age. Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of emotions.
Well, after finishing this reread, I went back and had a look at my first review, and I believe my initial thoughts still stand. This book will destroy you and build you back up and then flip you upside down whilst kissing your forehead. That review in itself was chaotic, but hey, that's House of Earth and Blood in a nutshell. Like most people, I found the first 100 pages info dumpy, but it wasn't as awful as I was expecting, and reading it through the second time, I actually didn't find it overwhelming at all. I found it so much easier to envision the world, and I paid attention to details that I missed the last time. I didn't think I would feel the emotions as strongly the second time around, and fuck was I wrong. I thought that knowing what would happen would prepare me, but I was genuinely sobbing during certain parts, you know, Lily, light it up,
yeah. Yeah.
The wolf pack in the bone quarter, Hunt in the shower, recovering after his mission. They all broke me. I forgot just how much I loved this world, and even though it's a fantasy, I think having it set in modern times with technology makes it feel more relatable. Bryce is a goddamn queen, and Hunt, my man, just wants to live his life worshipping her, and to be honest, same. Overall, I'm still just as obsessed with this series as I was when I first read it nearly 2 years ago. Sheer thick book, but she's so worth it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's thick, but she worth it.
Yeah.
Hands down, flip it and reverse it.
Yeah, so that's straight away where my head went.
This story in particular has like so much heart. There is so much love and such a journey that you go through. It's truly so immersive, like you guys have said. Again, we do wish the first 5 chapter info dump was a bit smoother, but then again, I read a lot of high fantasy, so I was kind of like, bring it on, sucker. I did love to see more of the plus size representation in a main character as well. Bryce feels like such a different, if not more relatable gal than say Aelin or Feyre, but they all still have like an equal place in my heart. The way that Bryce would tell me to crawl and I would be on my hands and knees in a gun range like that, just gone. I would also like to give a shout out to the men of this book, like Hunt, Rune, the Frat Pack, even the fucking Merman, Tharion. Like something is in the water in Lunathian for sure. I know that some people like to critique Sarah J. Maas books for not being like very highbrow enough, but there's a reason that these books are like crap. She cracked the code on how to make me go absolutely feral, and there is not a book of hers that I do not like. Court of Frost and Starlight doesn't count, and that's fine.
It's almost too small to hate.
It's a novella.
I'm indifferent.
Yeah, it's a novella.
Rereading this book reminded me of all the things I love about her books, like the way she can draw you in with the happy things like banter and sass, and then rip your heart out with moments like the pack and Lily's death, only to bring you back to life with a goddamn vacuum. It's insane.
The pack the second time around hits so much harder, doesn't it? Like the first time you don't even care about them because they're nothing.
Like, who are these
but then when you read it again, you're just, oh my God, Connor. No, it hurts.
Look, like we've already established, this book has a lot of info dumping at the beginning. It's known for it. In general, this book is built very differently from other Sarah J. Maas books. Like, it's so much heavier because it's not a learn-as-you-go story like ACOTAR where you're Feyre and, oh gosh, Feyre exists. Nope, you're just chucked in there and, oh gosh, there you go. There's like a heavily populated city with some mermen and they've got a mobile phone and it's like, okay, that's a lot. So I kind of wanted to, normally we do a who are our bitches summary to begin with. And it was kind of hard to narrow that down.
There's so many characters.
So many.
So we're on a planet called Midgard, a planet. So again, that's already something new. Specifically, we're on the continent of Albara, the city of Lunathian, aka Crescent City. There's all these houses in Midgard, like House of Earth and Blood, Sky and Breath, Many Waters, Flame and Shadow, and everyone's kind of broken up into those. If you want to look into this, do so at your own leisure because the cast of this book is so goddamn big and we need to point out the key players so we can move along. To start off with, Bryce Adelaide Quinnan, our thick with 2 C's, redhead FMC, with enough sass to cover the entire world.
Slay.
She has a heart of gold, but would also impale you on her stilettos, and we would say thank you.
I would.
She is half human, half fae, is just living her best YOLO life. We've got like Bryce's girl gang of besties, which is Danica Fendid, leader of the Pack of Devils. Like she's a wolf, badass, very, very dead. Cannot stress how dead she is.
But still causing shit.
Being a pain in the fucking ass from the grave.
Honestly. Fury Axtar, mysterious as fuck assassin, but also in the girl group. So that seems super chill. That
also could have sass in my ass.
Sass, put the ass.
I wish I was as quick-witted. excited.
Then we've got Juniper Andromeda, who's our fawn bestie ballerina, also in the girl group. And then we've got Lahaba, fire sprite work wife.
Rip.
Fine, I'm not crying.
Lahaba just for some reason reminds me of a bubblegum flavour.
Yeah, no, she's not Lahaba.
How big do you imagine
dead
her?
Flavor.
Like this?
Like iPhone.
This.
iPhone. Yeah. Baby. Too far related to our FMC, we've got Ember, Quinlan and Randall, which is Bryce's human mum and adoptive / chosen father. And then we've got Rune, Dan and Crown Prince of the Valbarian Fae. We probably never looked wider, and yet I'm not ashamed.
I know. Oh, God, the cringe.
We've got Jessica Rover. I say Jessica. It's just a butt with a butt. That's our FNC's boss.
Then bit we of a have psycho.
Bit of a psycho, honestly. Kind of bit vibe of with her, huh? Honestly. Then we have our MMC, which is Orion Athalar, a.k.a. Hunt Athalar, a.k.a. the Umbra Mortis, and he is going for so many names and he needs to calm down. He's an enslaved fallen angel assassin just trying to survive while destroying his soul in the capitalist chain gang, you know?
You know.
On our MMC's side of the fence, we have the Triari, aka my fellow enslaved angels in Christ. What's up?
How many drinks did you have? My fellow Jesus. Enslaved angels.
Why do we always turn strangely religious?
We've got Isaiah, Naomi, Justinian, and Victoria. And Justinian kind of reminds me of like a foot infection, like tinea or whatever it is. So we're just going to leave him behind.
I didn't even remember who he was, what he was
he's
doing.
He's one that gets
so
crucified, blank. Which is Bryce's fae dad. We've got Sabine Fendi, yeah. Mother to Danica, who again is super dead. We've got the Under King, leader of the dead. The Viper Queen, who's like mafia bitch.
All right, let's go. Welcome to Georgia summarizing the absolute fuck out of this book. Get ready. We meet our FMC, Bryce, and her bestie, Danica. Bryce is half fae. What a slay. What a day rolling in the hate. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I'm done now with that. But they have cute matching tattoos, so that's also another slay again, but we're not rolling in the hay this time. It's fine. We also meet Lahaba and Jezebel, whom we've described above, so I shall not do it again. Okay, let's move on. Danica's grandfather was the prime of the Valbarian wolves. Danica was in the pack of devils, blah, 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 whatever, I don't care. Philip Briggs is a criminal who is getting out of prison because of a technicality. Danica is not happy about it because he tried to bomb a nightclub, which is pretty fucking fair to not be happy about him getting out of prison, I would say.
I think that's a fair response, yeah.
We have the Umbra Mortis, aka Hunt, aka Micah's personal assassin, with the rare gift of lightning in his veins, which could eliminate almost any threat, including my fucking pussy.
Time to jump back in.
Time to come back.
We have Sabine, Danica's mother. Bryce hates her. She's an alpha and she's also an alpha cunt. So slay.
Facts.
Danica is the only one out of the pack of devils who hasn't made the drop into immortality, same as our FMC bestie, and they're going to do it together. It turns out that Bryce can defend herself because guns, not Dez and Troy, like me, like my guns, but literal like pew-pew guns. Pew-pew-pew. So there are 7 gates inside the city set along like a line running through the city designed as like a quick way for guards in the districts to speak with each other. And they basically, you put a hand on the pad and speak and then the voice can travel to the other gates. I don't know why I put this in here. Whatever. They say that superstition grew, claiming that a gate could make wishes come true and that to give over a droplet of your power was to make an offering to the 5 gods. Interesting, but is it? Georgia? I don't fucking know. Bryce and Danica love each other and they're absolute besties. So buckle the fuck up for that train wreck of trauma coming to bite you in the ass. We meet Fury and Juniper. Connor is Danica's second and is one of Bryce's besties. He loves her deep down. We know it. Sarah knows it, which is why she's dangling this fucking carrot in front of our eyes.
Bitch.
Sarah.
Bryce ends up going to the White Raven nightclub with Fury because Danica is having like a wolf pack night. It's like a girls' night except with all the wolf buddies, you know? Bryce and Fury end up doing a fuck ton of drugs and Bryce like stumbles home and then there's blood on the door because of course there fucking is, okay? Danica and everyone that Bryce loves is dead. D-E-A-D. Dead. And this is why we can't have nice things. Okay. Bryce ends up grabbing like the leg of the table and runs after the demon that killed her friend.
Did you say the leg of a wolf or something?
Well, that's like, oh, the leg. Because weren't they wasn't it described?
They're in piles.
That's what got me. It wasn't just like a dead body with some scratches. They were like, pulp. His head mush. Went that way and mush. His legs went that way.
This is why Briny can't drink orange juice with pulp, okay?
Because
pulp.
They were pulp.
Oh.
Yeah.
But no, she doesn't grab one of the wolf legs. No, she grabs the leg of a table and she runs after that demon and she finds it eating an angel's heart, or like almost eating the angel's heart. Ooh. And she ends up beating it with the leg of the table, like love the badass that she is. It runs off. She's injured though, and she's trying to stop the bleeding from the angel. And then we meet Mr. Lightning Fingers, aka Lightning Up My Pussy, Lightning McQueen, my pussy. I don't know. It just kept coming. It was like word vomit. We find out that most of the angels that were involved in the 18th, which is basically a rebellion that was led by Shahar, whatever the fuck her name is, and Hunt was the commander of the armies, which ended up failing. Too bad, so sad. They end up having like a halo, which is the mockery of the divine auras early humans had once like betrayed angels possessing. It's like on the brow. It's a tattoo. Branded. Not good. Means you're a slave, basically.
I love that it's also like a barbed wire tattoo. So it's very, very Bogan of Sarah, honestly.
It's super Aussie outback Bogan. Isaiah and Hunt are looking at Bryce's criminal record, interrogating her. She's fucking over it. She's just lost everyone she loves. She's fucking sick to death of this shit. I'm very fucking depressed about Danica and the pack of wolves, but our girl is on a fucking vengeance quest. So we put their feelings aside for the vengeance quest, okay?
Yeah.
That's what we do. We meet Rundanin, Crown Prince of the Valbarian Bay, and I'm fucking turned on.
We're all crumping again.
Yes, I'm fucking turned on, but Bryce is not, because he is her half-brother and they don't really get along. This time, we're not fucking our stepbro.
Yeah.
Why not?
Sad face.
I'm glad. I'm glad.
Just why not?
22 months later, Bryce is back at the White Raven, in the bathroom specifically, because she has a business meeting, aka she's fucking someone in the bathroom, slay.
Fantastic. What a queen.
We end up learning a little bit more about the drop ritual. Which is, oh my god, I do go into it. Wow.
Look,
the drop was the easy part, falling into one's power. But once the bottom was reached, the mortal body expired and then the clock began counting down. Mere minutes were allowed for the race back up to life before the brain shut down permanently from lack of oxygen. 6 minutes to start barreling down the psychic runway along the bottom of one's power, a single desperate shot at launching skyward towards life. Do we care? No. But yeah. Slay.
Just make them powerful.
Don't you dare take the power from the female main character.
No.
Hunt is working with Micah because he offered Hunt a deal after the failed rebellion sitcho. Hunt needs to pay back every life he took during the final battle, and he's basically blamed for like 2,217 deaths. And so far, he has only paid back 82 lives. So he's got some work to do. He's on the clock. Micah is the only person who has offered him the chance of freedom, and he ends up being like, Hunt, I want the murderer fucking caught. So he's like, go find him and I'll cut your debt, okay? I'll cut it up, all right? Slay, like what they did with those pack of wolves.
I was like cutting some shapes, like, and you were like, like, no, murder.
Murder. But this does mean for us forced proximity, right, with our FMC. Woo! While she's on her vengeance quest, okay? Yes, round of applause.
Say more.
Bryce does literally slam the door on Hunt's face when he comes to her apartment, though, and it's giving Feyre and the Slipper vibes, and I'm literally obsessed with it. I love it so much. We find out some info about Sandriel, Pollux, and the Hind. Blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Hunt gets the job of protecting Bryce, because she might be at risk, and I love Bryce testing Hunt's will to live, because we get this quote. She strode for the front door, hips swishing like she knew precisely how spectacular her ass was.
Yeah, she did.
happy.
Rune is one of about a dozen Fey princes across the planet of Midgard, but he is the only starborn among them. Rune received the star sword, blah, blah, I don't care. When Rune saw the oracle, she told him the royal bloodline would end with him. So basically, he can be my daddy, but he can't be a real daddy.
Oh,
daddy in the bedroom, not out of.
not out of the bedroom. But it is sad because you do, you kind of like block it out, and then you get to the end of Sky and Breath and you're so like immersed in these characters and you're like, oh wait, the Oracle literally said he's gonna fucking die.
Yeah, she's
yeah, he's gonna. And even she said in an interview, you should be worried about Rune.
Yeah, Sarah.
No, I am worried about him.
But anyway, yes, can't be a real daddy, but he's my daddy. The king wants Rune to get married to Hypaxia. He also tells Rune to find Luna's horn. Okay, prime information right here. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Hun keeps trying to speak with Bryce, but ends up just watching her place from like the building across the street. And I already love the dynamic because apparently Bryce's pet. Don't ask me to say its fucking Syrinx. Name. It's some Syrinx.
Syrinx. Yes.
All right. The little tiny lion cat thing appears next to Hun at dawn, bites him on the ass for looking like he was dozing off, then vanishes again. So Bryce saw Hun grabbing his ass like a fucking idiot when he flew over to his plane. She blasted her music and ignored him like a brat, and I fucking died.
I love it.
Bryce goes to visit Rune, and he lives with his friends Tristan, but they call him Flynn, and Declan. She asks Rune for info on the Viper Queen. Rune's not happy when he finds out that Hunt is the one protecting Bryce, but then Bryce ends up giving Hunt her list of suspects, which the Viper Queen is one of them. Shocker, no one is shocked.
Yeah, look, Mafia Queen. Yeah,
no like, one is shocked.
Murder.
She's suspect number one.
They go to the meat market, and the Viper Queen meets with Hunt and Bryce. She doesn't know who killed Danica or Maximus. Who's Maximus again?
That vampire. That was the business meeting in chapter one.
That's right. Yes. Eat it. Don't eat it. No. Fuck it.
That's who's murdered who we're investigating the murder of, because it's the same way that Danica and the pack died.
She has alibis for both of the murders, and she tells Bryce to look toward where it hurts the most for answers. So thanks for fucking nothing, cunt.
Yeah. Real helpful.
I hate how everyone does this in every one of Sarah J. Maas's books. They are just scoot around the answer. Bryce ends up inviting Hunt inside the library. I know I didn't mention it, but she works inside a library, leave me alone, to help her with her research for Danica. They meet with Rune at Luna's temple, and we learn that Luna's horn was a weapon wielded by Peleus, the first star born prince during the first wars. The demon princes wanted the horn. The star eater bred a new horror to hunt the horn, and like basically Bryce sees an illustration inside one of the books of this like terrible creature, and she recognizes it as being the same demon that she saw the night that Danica died.
We can call it Chris.
It's Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
It's Crisps. Yeah, the demon's called Chris from down the road. During the final battle of the First Wars, Prince Peleus and the Prince of the Pit fought. The Star Eater struck the fatal blow, but not before Peleus summoned the horn's strength and banished Prince of the Pit, his brethren, to slay.
In Christ.
And their armies back to hell, sealed the Northern Rift forever, and the horn ended up cracked in two when Peleus sealed the Northern Rift, so its power was broken and it couldn't be fixed. They think that someone has summoned the demon to hunt the horn, but they're not really sure why. If it's broken, don't make much sense, but whatever, we're here for the journey. Rune can hunt the horn though, because his Starborn power is woven into the horn by Prince Peleus. Wow, information. Great.
That we will not remember.
But shock horror, everyone stop. There's been another murder. Hunt takes Bryce to see the crime scene, and she's not okay. She doesn't need to be reminded of this mess again. There's pulp everywhere. Find out that the angel that had his heart almost eaten that first night was Micah, the archangel. What the fuck? She shaved him.
She shaved him.
Hairless.
Mole rat. But yes, so she saved him. She did not shave his back. She saved him. And that's a bad no-no. We don't like that. But we don't know that yet. We're thinking, wow, she's so great and brave. How she did that. But now Georgia is like Hannah Montana. Bryce meets with Juniper at the White Raven. Hunt finds out that Bryce isn't actually drinking alcohol, even though she keeps like acting like she's drunk, but she's drinking water. And then big dot 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 silence, because there's a bomb.
So shit has just gotten real, and Bryce is sprawled on the floor surrounded by body parts once again and shrapnel. Bryce hasn't made the drop, therefore she isn't as powerful as everyone else. So Juniper is fucking mad that Bryce tried to sacrifice herself to shield her. Fair call. Fair call.
If any of you tried to shield me, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, like, save yourself.
I'd be pissed off with you if you let me live. How dare you? Yeah, I want to be
you're
rid
going,
of this
take
place.
Me with you.
So Hunt takes Bryce out of the club and carries her off as if she weighs nothing. What a man. Boy. They head to Runes, where he cleans her up and assesses her injuries. Hunt notes that the scar on her, I quote, sleek, unnervingly perfect thigh is still so prominent, meaning she must not have gotten it healed after the attack 2 years ago. He blames himself, but also senses maybe Bryce isn't the uptight princess he always labeled her to be. And here is where we get this amazing line from Queen Bee. When males are kneeling between my legs, Athalar, they're not usually grimacing. As discussions continue, they start to think perhaps the human rebels set off the bomb, smuggling in a new exploding liquid in a case of wine. On the box, there is a Kyres rebel, but I'm not really sure how to pronounce that.
There's a rebel symbol.
There's a rebel
It's a
group.
Rebel group, and it's alongside a symbol of the, you guessed it, the horn. So we, yeah, back to Luna's horn.
There's links.
There's links.
So many fucking links.
So the Autumn King knows Bryce is looking for the horn with Rune and is concerned of Bryce's intentions once it is found. He demands Bryce has an all-day live-in protection, to which Rune volunteers, yes, please. Bryce isn't having a bar of that and instead chooses her own roommate. And who wouldn't want to live with the Umbra Mortis?
Yes. I'm like, hello, I am also your housemate. Don't mind me, I'm just in the nude at all times.
This is a no-pants household.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
Like, good morning, Hunt.
No shirts allowed, Hunt. On their way to their apartment, Hunt sees how exhausted Bryce is and questions her about not making the drop yet. Bryce says, I was waiting. We were supposed to make the drop together. We picked 2 years from now. And he knows exactly who she meant. I know, the heartbreak. And this part is really where we start to see a shift in Hunt and Bryce's relationship as they discuss the hard truths of the past, opening up just that little bit more. Bryce opens up about her and Danica, as well as Connor. Oh, I can't talk about Connor without tears. Hunt tells Bryce about the deal with Micah and how he needs to find the murderer before the summit meeting. His debt will be reduced to 10. That's a bloody big reduction from 2000 such and such.
Yeah.
Slight reduction.
Like Friday sale.
Yeah.
Rune meets Hunt and Bryce to go to the library after making the request the night prior, which Bryce only agreed to do if Declan would be at their disposal. Declan sends over the information they wanted, coordinates and locations for Danica's daily routine. Danica was stationed at the temple the 2 days before the horn was stolen and during the blackout. Sketchy shit. We get some cute Lily action as she tries to flirt with Rune, doing God's work, really. Rune finds information in a book about the horn and how it only works for Starborn when filled with power. The horn is broken and Faye claimed it can only be repaired by light that is not light, magic that is not magic.
So another not answer.
Another
one.
Nice.
Brilliant.
But we continue. Hunt suggests they go to the Oracle for answers, which makes Bryce and Rune stiffen, both of which have had bad experiences. Hunt then volunteers to go after they dismiss the idea by saying, fine, assholes, I'll go. I've never been. It always seemed too gimmicky.
Haha, famous last words.
We end the library scene with this fabulous quote from Lily to Bryce. Your cousin is dreamy. I thought Athala was your one true love. Can't they both be? Yes, Lily.
Yeah.
Yes, they
Lily,
both
they
can.
Why choose?
Quick shout out to Hunt calling Bryce sweetheart.
Sweetheart.
Whenever he does that.
Hunt takes Bryce to the barracks and she takes a minute to go through his phone, noting all his photos are of corpses and nothing else. A total count of 36.
So good.
It's so specific. So in true Bryce fashion, she takes a selfie for his spank bank. Throughout their barracks adventure, Hunt opens up more about making the drop at 28 with a public anchor just after his mum passed away. Okay, I'm sorry. I went from spank bank to like depression
mom.
There.
Perfect.
Brilliant.
They make their way to the lobby where they're about to exit when they see Sandriel arrive and they come face to face with Micah. Micah questions what they're doing and Bryce starts to lie, but Micah doesn't buy it. Once Hunt explains that he is getting supplies for his room, Micah changes pace by asking Bryce out to dinner. Oh, hell no. She declines. Absolutely. But this is not the end of it, and Micah sends Hunt off to kill another to prove he is still a slave. What a dick.
It's giving little dick energy, Micah.
I'm just saying. Oh. Yeah, he's compensating for something.
So after this, a few days later, Hunt sees the Oracle and the Sphinx calls him by his real name, Orion Asselar. She explains that the horn can open the doorways between worlds. Hello, crossover. But she doesn't know how to repair it. He is also warned to stay away from Bryce.
Which is super good.
When he's told to stay away, but he can't because that pussy's so dang tasty.
I thought you were going to say...
pussy or toes?
I was going to say it's the toes.
It's the toes.
Bryce explains later on about her dealing with the Oracle and why they aren't the best of friends. When the Oracle looked into the smoke for Bryce's reading, she tried to claw out her own eyes. And we don't know what she saw yet.
Super good.
Yep.
We also discover after Mount Hermon, poor baby Hunt was tortured for 7 years in the Asteri dungeons.
Mm.
This pert. So here they're having like all these D&Ms, which is really cute, but very painful. So we learn that his first owner was Archangel Remuel, and it continued for 2 more years. When Remuel decided he'd be better suited as an assassin, it had been 9 years since Hunt had seen daylight.
Oh,
fucking
baby. Wrong. Baby boy.
I know.
And he deserves baby. Better than what he
deserves
got.
Better. It's so sad. We get a bit of background knowledge there. Hunt wants to try and get the security camera footage from the temple the night the horn was stolen. There's another murder, and the victim is, bit of a coincidence, a guard who was on duty at the temple the night the horn was stolen.
So interesting.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
What a coinky-dink.
Hunt and Bryce have a discussion about their past hookups after a little meet-up at the shooting range with Rune and Flynn. So look, they get over murders pretty quickly here.
Yeah.
Like, it happens.
It's just another Tuesday.
Bryce can aim, baby. She's not just a pretty face. The only shit part about this scene is when Hunt explains he's been ruined in love after the death of Shahar. Bit of a buzzkill.
Stockholm syndrome.
Next. Declan calls and he has found something. Someone swapped out footage of the temple during the time the horn was stolen. The person who headed up the investigation of the video footage was Sabine Fendir, Danica's mother.
The bean herself.
Plot twist. So that was the end of part two. Then we go into part three, the canyon. And after the shock news about Sabine, Hunt and Bryce start to discuss the motive behind it. Hunt says, everyone knows that the Prime was considering skipping Sabine to tap Danica to be his heir.
To tap Danica?
Mine are weird, mate. So granddad.
I feel like tap as in like, tap, you're it. His next quote is pretty harsh. Danica couldn't stay out of trouble. She could never keep her mouth shut and know when to be quiet around her enemies. And look what became of her. That stupid little bitch in there is still breathing and Danica is not. Danica should have known better about all of it, starting with that slut of a roommate.
Which also, that quote Sabine. That's is a Sabine. Bit rough.
That's Sabine. That's the footage of her after Danica's death. What a hoe.
Yeah, what a hoe. Don't we own slut shame in this house?
Absolutely not. You hoe until you cannot go.
And Bryce takes that pretty harsh, and Hunt is consoling her. However, gets distracted by what, Emily?
Her tits.
The rubid red toenails.
I wish it was her tits.
I was close.
I wish it was her pussy. I wish it was anything other than the toes.
Even a kneecap.
And he even goes as far as envisioning tasting them. Down, boy. Down. Calm your
shit. He's got her dogs out and he's like, nom, 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 nom. Woof, woof, woof.
Rune goes to see a medwitch to ask about the case. He asks if she could think of any way a magical object might be fixed that people haven't tried yet. You speak of Luna's horn. Magic and the power of 7 holy stars couldn't repair it.
Helpful.
Again, no help whatsoever. Every person they talk to just gives them this roundabout, like, just another question. They talk some more and Rune says, do you think your queen might have the answer? The medwitch replies with the new queen's name, Hypaxia, and explains she will be at the summit and he can talk to her there. I hope to see you again, Prince, the medwitch said. Rune pondered on her farewell for some time, realizing he never asked for her name. Oh, if you know, you know.
Oh, if you know, you know.
That's a little nugget. If you don't know, well, you'll find out. After 2 days of searching for unusual activity on city cameras, she captured a grainy image of a foot, shredding claws, like, yuck. More feet. It's Chris. He's back. It didn't attack anyone, but it was spotted in Moonwood. The last place it was, the Rose Gate. So after dinner, they head out in the rain to the gate because Bryce can't help herself. She can't help herself. She has to go straight away. And you look, I'm okay with that too. But guys, the next part, Jelly Jubilee. After investigating, they realize the demon might be using the sewers to get around. Hunt and Bryce decide not to follow their instincts into the sewers until they have backup and a shit ton more weapons. So they head home and clean off. This is where Hunt discovers Bryce's darkest secret, Jelly Jubilee. And no, it's not a dildo, much to Hunt's disappointment.
Much to my
disappointment. I really wasn't expecting a My Little Pony moment.
Yeah, no, neither.
No. Hunt, why do you have a box of unicorns in your linen closet? Hunt, why are you snooping? What were you looking for? And Bryce is not dumb. And she ends the conversation pretty quickly by saying, you thought it was a sex toy, didn't you? You think I keep a vibrator in my linen closet?
Yeah, Hunt, grow up.
Bryce, next time you want to check out my vibrators, just ask Athala. They're in the left nightstand.
Yes, bro.
Hunt and Bryce head to the Istros River to see our main merman, Tharion. They give him the rundown and he agrees to ask around for information. Bryce sees a messenger otter and my God, I need one.
I feel like, thank you, Sarah, for making messenger otters a thing.
Agreed.
High viz.
And then like a little hat with a little backpack.
Hunt and Bryce then head to the wolves' den in Moonwood in search of Sabine. Bryce bumps into sweet baby Ethan and he's acting not so sweet, but that's fair. He has hate for Bryce and her actions towards Connor leading up to his death, particularly sleeping with a random person in a club bathroom after giving Connor hope of something more. I don't blame Ethan, to be honest, and all the messages he saw. Oh.
Yeah, that was a bit of a dick move by Bryce, but she was coked up to the max.
She was not herself.
And then also for her phone to be hacked and all of those messages, like anyone's group chat with your best friends is chaotic as fuck.
I'd get arrested.
We all would. And imagine that being out in the world after all of those friends have died, so no one who understands your ratchet-ass humour is there.
They get there, they ask Sabine questions, and they catch her in a lie about Danica being at the temple. They take this as proof she is guilty. Afterwards, Ethan leads them out and says she never deserved Connor and that Sabine wants her dead. We guessed. After all this emotional turmoil, Bryce is hanging with her bestie June and Hunt heads out to the bar with the boys. Bryce has sworn she would stay put in the apartment for the night.
Lol.
Why on earth would he trust her? And Hunt, he didn't, because Naomi was on watch and dobbed her in.
Yeah. He was like, absolutely, I know the minute I set foot somewhere else, she's gone.
She's gone. Bryce is walking and Hunt catches up to her before a fight breaks out between them both. They're attacked by Chris again.
Fuck off, Chris.
And he sinks his teeth into Hunt's shoulder.
Don't you touch our man.
Nom nom.
After a bit of a roll around, Bryce and Hunt manage to kill it in time for Naomi and the Medwitch to come and help get the venom out of Hunt's body. Micah is on the ground also, questioning all that went on, and Bryce gives all the credit to Hunt. What doesn't make sense to Bryce is how she and Hunt were able to kill the demon so quickly, but Danica, Connor, and the pack of devils all couldn't take one on? Does make sense. It's not mathin'. The storm hits when Bryce and Hunt are two blocks from the apartment. They land on the roof and stand there embraced in the rain. It's raining. I'm glad you're not dead, she says, to which he laughs and says, so am I. They hold each other, breathing in each other's scent. Ew. And Bryce begins to stroke his back. He grabs her ass and it's about to happen, people. They're about to do dirty, dirty things we've been waiting on. And I'm going to do a Georgia here. ... Back the fuck up.
Yikes.
And we are at a standoff. Sabine has a gun pointed at Bryce. Hunt has a gun pointed at Sabine. Sabine is pissed that they came snooping around asking questions about Danica and the horn. Bryce casually tells Sabine that they know she killed her own daughter. And Sabine is like, you fucking what, mate? She admits to wiping the footage from the temple the night the horn was stolen because, plot twist, Danica stole the horn. What? Bryce naturally goes to defend Danica because surely Danica would never. Aww, poor Bryce. She has no idea how many things Danica truly kept from her. Sabine says she will fuck them up if they jeopardize Danica's legacy before yeeting herself off the edge of the building in her wolfy form.
Super interesting power wolfy move. Just like, peace out.
After dropping this bombshell, Bryce doesn't handle it and goes all Bella in New Moon and won't eat or run or talk. You know, the
it's a possibility.
I've made that joke so much recently.
She doesn't do anything for like 5 fucking days straight. Rune pops into the library to see if there are any updates on the horn, whilst also revealing that his medwitch friend mentioned a new synthetic magic drug thing that could possibly heal the horn. Bryce then drops the whole Danica stole the horn thing on Rune, and he is equally as shook. Bryce asks Rune if the sword can help trace the horn, to which he reveals that the sword has no power without the knife.
The knife.
You know, and we fucking know. The knife has been lost since the First Wars, and we get this prophecy. When knife and sword are reunited, so shall our people be. Screaming.
Oh.
Absolutely footnote for the people who have finished Sky and Breath, we had no idea.
We had no fucking clue. No clue.
Like, oh, wow, weird dagger. Okay.
Hunt smiles at Bryce, to which results in Rune staring at him with, don't fuck my sister. Don't fuck with my sister vibes. Oh. Both work. Rune goes home, but a messenger otter appears, resulting in squeals from Bryce and readers alike.
Yes.
It's a message from Tharion containing photos of a mutilated body he found in the river. Yay. No. The wounds match those inflicted by Chris the demon. Bryce comes to the conclusion that the demon didn't kill the wolves. They ended up as wolfy pulp. The wounds don't match.
True.
They don't match.
Bryce decides the best way to get answers is to summon a demon, naturally. She sets up the salt, and I'm honestly getting some supernatural Sam and Dean vibes from this scene when, surprise, Bryce summons one of the princes from hell.
Here we
meet everyone's favorite kitty cat, Adis. Bryce has met Adis before, much to Hunt's shock, after her meeting with the Oracle, only last time he appeared as a fluffy white kitty cat. Does anyone else get Emperor's New Groove? when she turns into a cat, when Yzma's a cat vibe? That's what I picture when I picture Adis's cat.
And FYI, I did find a picture of a white fluffy cat, and that is in the Sky and Breath aesthetic room.
Love it.
Fantastic. Now he appears as a blonde baddie. They ask him if he or any of the other princes have been setting loose demons in the city, which the answer is no. It is here we get the first hint that Hunt may be a little bit special with the following quote. A fallen warrior with the power of Adis's groomed brows lifted in surprise. His blue opal eyes narrowed to slits, then simmered like the hottest flame. What are you doing with a black crown around your brow?
Ooh.
We still don't know, do we?
Again, what? Another question with no answer.
After not really getting anywhere, Adis says to run the tests again and tells Bryce to make the drop and come find him when she's done. He vanishes, and Hunt is literally like, fuck you for that surprise. Bryce calls Declan to get them to run the test again on Danica's clothes, and then discovers that a test should have been done when the murder happened was skipped because the Autumn King ordered them not to run them. Bryce runs off to tell dear old dad how much of a prick he is.
Go, Bryce.
She arrives at the gates of the Autumn King's house and is promptly denied entry. The guards call her half-breed and half-human skank, and Bryce is about to go full Umbra on them. Then Rune shows up. Unfortunately, defending Daddy's decisions, and Bryce gets shitty. She decides she needs a drink. Obviously, the White Raven is kaput, so she heads to her old favourite whiskey bar. She hasn't had a drink in 2 years. Nothing like Daddy issues to push one to alcohol. Hunt appears with a tonic for her leg pain, which he made taste like grapes because he's a big softy. Bryce is being a bit of a bitch and decides to hit Hunt where it hurts, and asks him what his long dead girlfriend would think of him nuzzling her neck the other night.
Damn, rude. Bryce!
Yeah, you're hurting doesn't mean he has to. Yeah. Hunt storms off and leaves Bryce to drink alone. But then she changes her mind and decides to cook Hunt an apology meal, which turns out terrible because, of course, she can't cook. She can shoot, but she can't cook. We get this lovely quote from Hunt, which awakens the horny beast within me. He hadn't thought about Shahar for a second while they had been on that roof, or in the days following. And when he'd had his hand wrapped around his cock in the shower that night, and every night since, it hadn't been the archangel he'd thought of. Not even close.
What? Well, I'm glad you're not thinking of your dead ex-girlfriend while wanking about Bryce. Like,
I agree.
Just about while wanking, full stop.
While wanking in general.
Yeah.
Bryce explains that she went to a storage unit to retrieve some of Danica's things that they could use for the testing. She gets a little bit deep and explains to Hunt that she was a mess before Danica died, and afterwards it didn't get any better. She has always felt inferior due to her half-fae, half-human status, even though those closest to her never held it against her. He asked why she didn't pursue dancing, to which which Bryce explains she was body shamed, which is fucked. To which Hunt tells her, her ass is perfect. Man sure knows how to compliment a woman.
Yes.
They talk about the future and their regrets, and Bryce offers up her spare room to Hunt permanently if he ever wants it. They trauma dump for a while, eat the terrible dinner, and go to bed. Bryce dreams about kitty cat Adis, who admits he knows about her secret powers. Back to that later. He tells her to make the drop. Hunt delivers Danica's clothes to Victoria to be tested and receives a text from Micah to come to his office alone.
Yikes.
He receives a kill order as punishment for falsely accusing Sabine and sets off on the task. Bryce is texting him, but is worried when his replies aren't his usual tone, because we women can sense these things.
Mm-hmm.
She knows something is up. He doesn't reply for a long while, and she calls Rune in a panic looking for him. Suddenly he appears. He's covered in blood, not his, and is basically in killer zombie mode. He locks himself in the bathroom and tortures himself under the scalding hot water. He's in there for over an hour before Bryce comes to investigate. She tells him she's going to help clean him off, and she does. This scene honestly broke me. I didn't really pay much attention last time.
Mm.
She picks up lavender-scented soap. I was like, Sarah, you put that shit away.
Hunt is so helpless in this scene. She dries him off, dresses him, and then he asks her to stay. He curls up in her lap and falls asleep. Sobbing.
Sweet little baby angel.
I know.
Patting his head. The next morning, Hunt thanks Bryce by giving her a kiss on the cheek, which turned Bryce and likely everyone on so fucking much.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt could smell her arousal, naturally, and asked what was on her mind. She said, a designer sale. Oh, girl. Why are we lying? Hunt's eyes darkened, which made her nipples hard, and same. He saw this, and his face turned feral. He promptly reminds her that she's not wearing any underwear, which in turn has her fantasizing about Hunt lifting her onto the kitchen bench, spreading her legs wide, fucking her first with his tongue and then his cock until she's sobbing and screaming with pleasure.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it too.
Well, that escalated.
Hunt was just looking at her, waiting for her approval like the fucking gentleman he is. When everyone's day is ruined because he's burning the eggs and smoke has filled the kitchen, the spell is broken and Bryce heads off to work. Jessica has a new pet, a knock, some creepy as fuck demon merman who likes to eat people. Lily is terrified and fair enough. So we had a bit of a transition there. We literally went from
fucking in the kitchen,
to be on a kitchen counter
to someone fucking eating you. In the kitchen.
Not in the fun way.
Not in the fun way.
The test results from Danica's clothes come back and show that there was traces of something synthetic on them. It's not pure magic or tech or organic. They conclude it's some sort of drug, which has been leaked onto the streets, aptly named Synth. Sound familiar? The drug is also the one that could possibly be used to heal the horn. The plot thickens. Before they go hunting for the drugs, Bryce has a FaceTime with her parents, who want to meet Hunt. Before they do, he tells her the story about his mother and how she died. Bryce's mum lectures her on how clean the apartment is, her job, and demands to know why Hunt is her roommate. Honestly, this whole scene gave me the giggles because just picturing Hunt on FaceTime trying to calm Bryce's overprotective mum. Hunt drops a bomb to her parents about Bryce's leg pain and her mum demands she sees a med witch. Bryce is pissed and tells Hunt that the reason she hasn't had it fixed is because she wants the reminder. Once it stops hurting, then Danica and the pack of devils are gone. There will be nothing left but a memory. And excuse me while I go cry again. Bryce and Hunt wander around the meat market the next day, and Hunt buys Bryce a white opal for joy. So fucking cute. Bryce tries to get information from people about Synth, but everyone is in cahoots with each other and knows she's just snooping around, and all she gets is that she needs to go chat with the mer people. Tharian shows up and drops another bomb that Danica was seen doing a deal with Synth the night before her death. Secret that she kept.
Of course.
Fucking hell, Danica.
Bryce calls Fury, who surprisingly answers the phone after 2 years, to ask about Danica and the Synth. Fury says she didn't tell Bryce about it because they didn't want her trying it because she was a bit of a cokehead back in the day and probably would have. Bryce is like, how dare you? And Fury be like, too bad, so sad, she protected you, the end. Bryce believes that Redna Industries, the company Danica did business with, could be something to look into, so she starts trying. Did I just say shot?
She shot.
She shot.
She starts trying to hack into Danica's account. The next day, Bryce gets her period. She walks into the kitchen and Hunt can smell the blood and is like, oh my God, you're bleeding. Are you hurt? She's like, chill, it's my monthlies. And because he is literal goals, just asks if she needs anything and doesn't freak out. What a man. I remember laughing out loud at this thing because she talks about cramps and like being irritable and taking painkillers, and it's just so relatable for a fantasy book.
Yeah.
Turns out though that it's not just her period making her bitchy, it's Danica's birthday and she's sad. She gets a box of chalky croissants to celebrate, but someone wrote trash on one of them. Hunt loses his mind, flies off to find Emily Ravenscroft, the head of the Wolfie Pack at the moment, fucks her up with his lightning and says to leave Bryce the fuck alone.
Oh.
King.
Oh, King.
Bryce finally decides to go see a medwitch for her leg, but only because it's the only place she can get the Crystallos venom, which is needed for testing to make an antidote. Better than summoning another demon, I say.
Yes.
She goes through the surgery with no anesthetic, and the venom is extracted. Hunt is by her side the whole time, and when the pain is at its peak, he kisses her so softly. Swoon. And then we get this quote. A star bloomed inside her at that kiss. A long, slumbering light began to fill her chest, her veins. Yeah, the kiss did that. Insert side eye. It was the kiss.
Wasn't the venom leaving your body and allowing your powers to grow. Not at all.
No, it wasn't that.
No.
The medwitch does a few tests and is able to stabilize the venom. Hunt gets a phone call from Micah. They are both needed in his office. Sabine and Emily are there.
Oh.
Fucking. And shit's about to go down. Sabine demands retribution for Hunt's attack on Emily, and Micah punishes him with the living death. He cuts off Hunt's wings. It's actually so fucked. Thankfully, though, they will grow back now.
I can't.
While Hunt recovers, Bryce manages to log into Danica's Redner account, and she finds a secret folder with a photo of her old jacket. Bryce discovers a flash drive hidden in the jacket, which contains videos showing people reacting badly to synth. She tells Hunt, essentially, the drug gives you insane amounts of power until it becomes overwhelming and you literally rip yourself apart, turning into pulp. Somehow, after this discussion, they end up talking about the kiss in the medwitch's office. Pulp, I really love the transition in their conversations. They literally go from like trauma to smut. Now, Hunt asks if she wants him to kiss her again, to which she replies, I want to do it, if that's all right with you. To which Hunt says, do your worst. Here we fucking go. They finally go to fucking town making out on that couch. He asks her what she wants. She says all of it as she strokes his cock through his jeans. She straddles
over
him.
The denim.
She straddles him. He takes off her bra, kissing and sucking and all of the fun things. He shifts his attention to her lacy underwear, finding her soaked for him. Do you taste as good as you feel, Bryce? Hunt asks. Bryce responds, please find out immediately.
Yes, girl.
I love that.
Yes.
He finger fucks her right there on the couch and says, I'm going to fuck you until you can't remember your god's damn name. The fanny is fucking fluttering, ladies and gentlemen. He then cups her ass and says, I have plans for this beautiful ass, Bryce. Filthy, filthy plans. Jesus wept. Come for me, sweetheart, he demands. And so she does. After the best orgasm of her life, she remembers that he literally just has his wings amputated and their tryst has resulted in him bleeding on the couch. And that's one sure way to turn someone off.
Yeah.
So we got some of what we wanted.
Yeah, we got a little bit.
Quite enough.
I love he's like, yeah, I'm in such visceral pain that I'm wincing, but like, we can keep going. And she's like, no.
The medwitch comes to check on him and he's fine, he just needs a nap. When he's asleep, Bryce sneaks out to visit her old apartment, only to find the whole building on fire. She's getting close to who is behind this, and those people are spooked. Tharian tells her there's a synth deal about to go down in the river, so she joins up with him. They go out in stealth mode onto the river to watch the deal. It's the Viper Queen, shady bitch, and much to everyone's actual surprise, Hunt. I believe we are all in agreement when I say, what the actual fuck?
The fuck, Sarah?
What the fuck? Bryce confronts Hunt, who is surprised to see her, lol, and he tries to explain that the plan was to initially use the synth to free himself from the halo, but the video spooked him and he was trying to convince the others, Justinian and Victoria, irrelevant, to bail because it was a bad idea. Turns out the whole thing was actually a trap set by Micah, who appears just in time. Hunt tells Bryce that Danica was addicted to synth and that she took too much of it and that's how she died.
The implication that she took too much synth and she tore the pack of devils apart and then herself.
Like, it's so fucked. That whole moment is just so fucked.
Yeah.
Hunt and the others get arrested. Tharian takes Bryce away, heartbroken. She gets home to find Rune waiting. She pukes everywhere and he takes care of her like a good big brother. This is the first time they've like properly bonded in a while. Hunt is locked up, but not in a dungeon, but he's still in the Comitium. He's waiting his punishment. The only reason he isn't dead yet is because of the messages he sent the others trying to stop them. Bryce is back at work, depressed as fuck. We're back in, you know, Bella New Moon vibes. But the Autumn King decides to pop in for a visit. He tries to act like he cares. Bryce is having none of it. Really, all he wants is the horn. He tells her that he loved her mother and would have made her queen. And then Bryce is like, no. Remember when you hit her in the face and left a scar? Yeah, remember that?
Remember when you abused her and she ran for her life?
He then says that Bryce is more like him than she realizes, which isn't a good thing.
Big yikes.
Just random comment. Hunt is visited by Sandriel, who gives him a little slideshow of all the photos of him and Bryce before then revealing that she owns him once again and she's gonna fuck him up.
Dear God.
She's gonna fuck him.
No, we're not getting Amarantha because... and Reese vibes here.
No. And because she's like the twin of his dead lover, that they have the same face. That's an old
trauma. Fury shows up to tell Bryce about Hunt being given to Sandriel and reveals that her and Juniper are actually a thing. I love this scene.
Yay!
And I love how it's just like, shut up, we're a thing. Don't talk about it. But also, like, she could have told her 2 years ago. Anyway, she tells Bryce not to do anything stupid, so naturally Bryce does. She shows up to the Comitium and offers to buy Hunt for 97 million dollary dues and the necklace. Sandriel declines. Bryce then offers her life instead of Hunt's, which she almost takes because she is the daughter of the Autumn King, which she then reveals to literally everyone.
Yeah.
Rune then shows up and drags Bryce away before she can do anything even more stupid. She promises Hunt that she will free him. Even though she hates him still, she's like, nah, this ain't right.
She doesn't hate him though.
She doesn't hate him at all. Bryce rides down the river, probably to like ponder, and is then attacked by fucking Chris the demon again.
Chris, come on, man.
Thankfully, she isn't bitten and is saved by Rune, Declan, and Flynn, whose real name I forgot. Tristan. She tells Rune he is dead to her before returning to her apartment, and she's checking out her scars and wounds and was relieved to find that her tattoo wasn't shredded in the attack.
Super convenient.
Same.
I feel like this part of the book needs to come with its own warning because there is no safe place to pause in this part. This is like when you're on the downward spiral of a roller coaster and just when you think it's about to be like over, psych, it's the next drop. So we start with the summit. Basically every power player in Crescent City is there. The Asteri dial in via Zoom. Hunt is just keeping himself together when Rune just casually starts speaking into his mind, being like, oh my god, thank you so much for stopping my sister from selling herself into slavery. It's almost like this mind speaking. It's almost like some other fictional men we know.
Who could that be?
Anyways, this next part of the book is going to fly by on Hunt's regrown wings, so strap the fuck in. One day, Micah does not show up to his own fucking summit, which gives weird vibes. We flash to Bryce, who is with Lily and Syrinx studying up on lore to try and find a way to free Hunt. They're hidden in the library at the gallery when Micah just waltzes in back at the summit. Jessica gets a text from Bryce and then with Declan's help shares her phone with the summit so everyone can see the security cameras in the library. Bryce is asking for help while Micah just like lounges about and they all just watch as Micah goes on a full villain monologue on various topics including but not limited to the Great Library of Parthos, but most importantly that Bryce is actually the horn and he has come to collect it.
Sneaky tattoo.
Sneaky tattoo indeed. The summit can only watch as Micah throws Bryce around like a ragdoll before admitting to killing the pack of devils. And he was behind the synth, the bombings, the murders, the Chris, the demon. He then pumps a syringe of synth into Bryce's leg. And just to add to it, Micah then yeets Syrinx into the tank with a knock before blasting Bryce with his power just to see what happens.
No, I hated that part.
He is about to start carving the horn off of her very skin when Lily manages to trap him in a bathroom and seals the door to give Bryce a chance. I was like, whoa. Syrinx can't swim, and so Bryce does not even hesitate before diving into the tank with the knock after him. Just as Bryce gets Syrinx out of the tank, the knock pulls her back in. And this fucking queen twists the knock's dick to get him to let her go. And all the guys at the summit are like, oh! Syrinx makes it through, but now we're back to facing a very angry archangel who is stuck on the dunny. Bryce is carrying Syrinx freaks out when she realizes that Lily is not with her. And in one of the most soul-destroying deaths to be ridden, Lily buys her friends time. This tiny little fire sprite holds the line. In the emotional goodbye, we discover that Bryce had bought Lily's freedom and she was a free elf. Dobby was a free elf.
I'm actually going to cry again.
And then we get this quote. Just like, Lily's like, I know, then let the world know that my first act of freedom was to help my friends.
Get fucked. I'm sorry, but Dobby the writing, spot on.
It's fine. Tears are absolutely fine. Bryce makes it out, and we get Lily's last stand. She is chanting, and then the two chants become one as she draws up her power, and we get one of the most iconic lines of any Sarah J. Maas books. My friends are with me, and I am not afraid.
Oh, okay. I'm a little emotional.
As Micah breaks out, Lily breaks the tank, instantly killing herself and allowing 100,000 gallons of water to explode into the library. Bryce knows she could run and try to hide in the city, but she also knows that that is not what Lily bought her time to do. So now we get to the next cinematic masterpiece of this book.
Next!
Again, and at any stage, like a normal book might have finished when Hunt betrayed her, right?
Yes.
That's the end of book one. Yeah. But no, it just... Nuts. Okay, another one.
Fucking going.
Yeah.
And keep in mind as well that Hunt, Rune, all of the gang, they're just watching this unfold at the summit. Like, I want to be sick reading this because the adrenaline is just, like, so there. Bryce sprints to Jessica's office and there's this just casual disassembled Godslayer rifle on the wall. You better believe Sarah J. Maas mentioned that shit for a fucking reason and I ignored it.
Same.
Yes.
I promptly was like, sick, good day. But no, Bryce goes to the vault and downs a vial that Hypaxia had given her, like it's a fucking tequila shot. This is the antidote to the sin. So our gal now just has to wait it out. And she could wait it out by taking a summer vacay or going to therapy, but no, our queen would never. Instead, she assembles the Godslayer rifle as easy as if that shit was her vibrator in that bedside table. Micah is out of the library, and our girl fucking does like a Mission Impossible slide across the floor into position as she assembles the gun, aims, and waits for her moment to fucking kill an archangel. And that she fucking does.
Nice.
Time warps and stretches as Micah dies, gravity goes hippy-dippy, and honestly, it's crazy, but we're just happy to be here. Especially as Bryce goes, yeah, I've seen horror movies, and you better fucking believe I know that you must always double tap. And that's when she gets Danica's missing ass sword from the closet, where it has been since chapter fucking one, and slices Micah.
Sabine is livid.
Sabine's like, what the fuck, man? Bryce slices Micah to pieces, and then she fucking barbecues him and vacuums up the ashes.
So Bryce energy.
It's the most iconic scene in any book.
It's just
and they're
flawless.
All just watching on just, Zoom.
Yeah.
Hunt's just like, oh my god.
Not the vacuum.
We just need a moment to absorb the absolute badassery that has just been witnessed in any other book. That would be it. That would be it, right? Yeah. But no. Sarah said that we shall not know peace today. So next roller coaster. Bryce is like, damn, why has no one come to arrest me or shit? And then she hears the screaming and turns out Micah blasting the horn in her back did actually work, just on like a much bigger scale. And like every gate in the city has now become a portal to hell.
It's just one thing after another.
It does, and it just keeps going. She drops Syrinx off home and loads up on weapons before diving back into the street to protect innocent civilians. And Bryce surges through the streets, and all of her training with Randall has like led her to this moment. At the summit, all the old white people are not allowing the peasants into their safe houses, and Hypaxia is like, nah, fuck this. This is some white people shit if I've ever seen it. Then we discover that they can't leave because Micah destroyed literally like all of their ability to travel to Lunathian, but Fury has like one helicopter, so they're just going to use that. Bryce is alone defending the meadows, which is like all the innocent civilians, when Ethan is patched into the car and says he's on his way to her. The gang at the summit are readying to get on Fury's helicopter when Sandriel appears and declares that no one can go, as the Asteri are just going to literally bomb the city off the face of the earth to deal with the problem. And the summit watches as Bryce and Ethan run for a bunker door, closing it at the last moment. Bryce uses her momentum to save Ethan, and so she's alone in the city and uses like the pause in the onslaught to call Hunt's phone. She thinks he won't answer it, but they let him. I'm gonna cry. Bryce is doing her like big goodbyes, but some of it's like a little bit unusual. She talks about secrets and things she hid. She tells Hunt that she was waiting for him and then leaves her phone and sprints for the gate. She makes it to the gate and then just starts to glow. She says that she is the heir to the Starborn Fae and holds the star in her hands.
What?
We then take a quick break from this for a flashback for a road trip that Danica and Bryce took that ended with them nearly dying. That is how Bryce had saved them. She had blinded the thugs with the pure light of a star from another world, from long, long ago, the gift of the ancient Fae reborn. Again, that's super interesting. Anyways, now back to our regular program. Bryce uses her starborn gifts and the horn in her blood to close the first gate. Sick, nice work, girl. Jesper watches on like she has seen a ghost, which is just a super interesting line that haunts me to this day, but that's fine. The Autumn King finally does something, and that is to call Ember Quinlan to question her about Bryce's starborn abilities, and Ember essentially says, fuck you, my dude, and good day. Hypaxia then shows up to fucking hustle and decides it's time to embody the French Revolution. She removes the halo from Hunt, Zap Daddy is fully charged, and literally beheads Sandriel, like tears her head off with his own hands. It's so fucking hot, and I'm not even going to pretend it's not alright. The Summit Squad roll out as they need to get to Bryce fast before the Asteri nuke the city, but the brimstone missiles are already airborne. Bryce is pinned beneath debris as more missiles are coming, and Hunt has one shot and takes it to get to her. His wings are still too weak to fly, and so he dives out of the helicopter on a one-way ticket. He races gravity to basically cover her with his body and his magic to shield her as missiles fall.
Imagine this in like the cinema.
What the fuck? So good. Sarah. Bryce comes to and doesn't get how she isn't dead. She's like, wow, look at all this ash falling down. But it's not ash, it's grey feathers. Oh, look, there's Hunt with no arms or legs or wings.
A giant hole in his back.
Giant hole. Bryce holds him in her arms and whispers to him before having a new plan. The rest of the gang have crashed in the helicopter and they're trying to make their way to Bryce, but we don't have time. Bryce goes to the dial pad of the gate and sends a message out through all of the gates begging for someone to come so that she has an anchor. She's going to do the drop to get enough power to save the city and close all the gates, but no one is answering. Oh. But then she hears Danica's voice whispering, light it up, and
I can't.
She sees that she is on the other end in the bone quarter and Bryce makes the drop. The people back at the summit think that it's an untethered drop and so there's no way for her to come back to life. Bryce makes the drop, passing to a power level that is beyond expectations as she harnesses every drop of power that anyone has ever given to the gates. Bryce passes Rune's power level and the light coming off of her heals the city, literally like repairing buildings. She manages to close the gates and her power level is a decimal point off of the Autumn King. But then she flatlines. Bryce has a spiritual cuddle with Danica and whatever the fuck the drop is. Bryce wants to stay there and not go back to life, but Danica is like, absolutely fucking not. As the clock ticks down on the time until Bryce is brain dead, it stops at 0.003. And then she starts running. And through love, all is possible because Bryce makes the ascent.
When I say that scene, like the scene of her running and like Danica's there with her and they're running and they're running. So many people have made edits with, you know that, what's that guy's name? He does the violin.
Joel Sunny.
There's like an edit that people do with one of those sounds. Mm-hmm. It was literally the most amazing. Oh my God. Tears running down my face, drowning me.
The only word that kind of comes to mind is epic. Like it's just epic. The book, everything, the story about it. Epic.
Hunt is healed and giving her chest compressions. And I want to die at this moment.
I can't. Because
the quote is, I heard what you said, hump, 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 when his powerful arms. What you were waiting to admit until I was almost dead, you fucking coward. His lightning surged into her, sending her body arcing off the ground as he tried to jumpstart her heart. He stared in her ear. Now come say it to my face.
Okay, I'm crying. I'm crying.
Goosebumps. As she makes the ascent, we get some super interesting quotes about her power shifting, dancing between forms and gifts. So cool, 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 cool. Bryce comes back to life and is like, Hunt, motherfucker, did you call me a coward?
It's just so them.
Yeah.
It's so them. Perfectly them.
The world comes back to life and Bryce and Hunter just, you know, like coping. Bryce has like a fun new 8-point star tattoo between her boobs, so that seems super cool as well. Just as they are about to finally fuck, the phone rings and it's Ember. So like Bryce answers because, you know, mum, tick, I can't deal with the blue balls, but that's fine. Hunter checks in with Isaiah, who has just realized he is now the highest ranking angel on site and is freaking the fuck out. But before Hunt can do anything, Bryce gets another call from Rigelus, aka Bright Hand of the Asteri, which is super creepy because he's an old ancient being in the body of a young man, a teenager. It's unsettling.
Yeah, it's weird. It's giving Bone Carver vibes.
It is, honestly. Mm. It is. Yep. Again, still unsettling. The Asteri grant Hunt his freedom as a gift, quote unquote, air quotations, air bunny ears. Except that gift comes with strings to let play the part and sing the party line as loud as they fucking want. So good. Rune, Declan, and Fury arrive, and wouldn't you know it, Rune had heard her through the gate and had tried to get there to anchor her. I just feel like that needs to be.
Yeah.
Oh. Rune is crying as she hugs him and says he doesn't give a shit about titles. The only thing he cares about is being called her brother. For fuck's sake, I'm crying again. The next morning, Bryce goes to the river. She sits on a bench that looks out at the Bone Quarter and replies to Connor's final text saying that she is home. The mist part. And for a moment, she sees all six, the pack of devils there waving at her for a moment.
That scene absolutely broke me the first time.
I sobbed for a solid hour.
Yeah.
Literally.
I think because Connor, you know, almost like first love type thing, and it was almost like her finally saying goodbye and him letting her go.
Oh, Jesus.
Anyway, amazing.
Epilogue time. Jessica and Adis are just having like a super, super casual conversation about recent developments. Apparently, Adis recognizes Bryce's light as that of Thayer, and that Hunt's dad would have been very proud. Jessica apparently knew him best, but then Adis just casually says that Hell is not going to abandon this world this time. What? What?
And like Jessica and Adis?
They know each other, they're just bantering. Okay, cool. I guess, fine. No answers. Super chill.
Yeah,
and
that's wow.
It. That is wow. The end of House of Earth and Blood. A music reference, I have this suggestion. It is a song called Unlovable by DeLacy, and it's giving like Bryce and Hunt for me because the lyrics are, I know sometimes I can be a bitch. I know I come with a lot of baggage. Tell me you love me and promise it. Sometimes I just need to fucking hear it. I'm unlovable as they come, babe. I'm unlovable, unlovable. And you said, don't talk shit about the girl I love. You love so hard and I want to believe you.
Yeah, love it.
Just giving them. I have also just done a really shitty screenshot of all the fan art that I have to start off with by tangerine.eileen, Bryce versus Chris in the alleyway with the table leg. Then we've got by Julia Arts, we've got Hunt on the couch with Syrinx and Hunt is in.
I love that.
Hunt's
in
his little
baseball cap. Beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
I love it.
Then by Ivy_Gwendolyn, we've got the shower scene. By Emily's Nath_Art, Jelly Jubilee.
I love this one.
By Rosalind Arts, we've got the gun range. Got their gun range.
That's amazing.
And by Mad Schofield, which again, Mad Schofield is the best thing to ever happen to fandoms ever. We've got Bryce and Hunt on the roof in the rain. And then we've also got Bryce, Hunt, Lily, and Syrinx in the library with the knock on the glass tank, just chilling.
I love that one.
I just could not imagine this knock. And then I saw that and I was like, whoop, that's it.
By Gabriella Ragusi, we have Let Me Buy You Time, aka Lily, burning up an actual storm. And then it's by Emily.Mildner, and she did one of Bryce and Danica, and it says Spring Break 15/0/29 VE.
Oh, yeah.
And I love this one.
It's so good. It's just,
badass.
Amazing.
Agreed.
Well, that is it for Crescent City 1, House of Earth and Blood. We've conquered the first book. that means the second book is coming. Now, we have a little break in between this episode and when we record House of Sky and Breath for obvious reasons. They are big, giant fuck-off books, so you can give us a fucking break.
And it's also holiday season. We've got a lot on.
So, yeah, we're going to be having a week break in between, but thank you so much to Emily and Jess for joining us again, and they will be back for House of Sky and Breath.
Yes, we will. Thanks heaps, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We will see you guys on the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube if you haven't already at A Book and a Bev Podcast.
Please rate, like, and subscribe. We hear that helps.
We love and appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.